Random House Audio presents Northwest Corner by John Burnham Schwartz. Read for you by Robertson Dean, Chuck Carrington, Rebecca Lohman, Kim My Guest, and Amanda Carlin. There are heroes, and there are the rest of us. Reservation Road. Part 1.
Sam.
Arno, bus.
Coach dips out of the locker room. Sam listens to the footsteps echoing down the long corridor and only now, knowing he's the last, removes the towel draped over his head. He picks up the 31-ounce aluminum bat lying by his feet, jams it into the Yukon duffel with the rest of his gear, and zips the bag closed. The bus is already running when he climbs on. The row in front belongs to him now. The doors fold in with a sigh, and old Hank shifts into gear for the 3-hour trip back to stores. Evening is falling. Sam slides his headphones on and tries to become just another shadow. Into the Athletic Center parking lot, the bus doors open. High fluorescent lights. Pools of blue night. A gangplank waiting, all lit up. He's sitting right behind Hank and should go first, but it feels less bad to stay where he is, headphones on, eyes nowhere, deep in the stump of his own mortification. Teammates start to shuffle by. Smells of glove leather and greased eye black, hail-like wrapping of spikes. A hand on his arm. It's Jake, his roommate. Sam lifts one side of the headphones an inch. Heading back to the room? Jake's voice is almost insultingly tender. The comfort you receive when, bases loaded and two out in the 10th inning of the college playoffs, you strike out without taking a swing, ending your team's season. Shower up, at least. You look like shit. Sam shakes his head gratefully. The bat never even left his shoulder. Okay, see you later. See you. Then the bus is empty, except for himself and Hank.
This ain't your goddamn limo, you know.
Hank's voice, a gravel bed, snowy buzz cut and jowly neck turned round on him from the driver's perch. The dash clock reads 10:20. Out of respect, Sam pulls off the phones. A sigh from Hank as he levers the doors closed.
So fuck it. Where to, DiMaggio?
Where to is O'Doul's. Off campus, third choice watering hole in town. Nobody's date night destination. The school bus pulls up outside. Neon fizzing through the windows, funhousing the gloom. He tells Hank to hold on, takes off his game jersey, and buries it in the duffel. He wishes the bag didn't say UConn in big white letters. It's not that kind of bar, but there's nothing to be done about it now. He's already down to the two-tone undershirt with the sleeves hacked off below the elbow, and the dirt-stained away-game pants worn low, no stirrups, and the spikes that make each step sound like he's chucking bags of marbles.
You're $1 million, Hank growls. Go get 'em, Tiger.
Thanks for the ride, Hank.
We all got bad days, Sammy.
Yeah. Suddenly he's blinking back tears.
Stay out of trouble now.
The bus doors start to close before his foot touches the curb. By the time he passes through the entrance to the bar, Hank and his caravan are gone.
O'Doul's is hot and crowded, the walls painted dark. A long time Sam stands drinking by himself. When a stool at the bar finally opens, he slides onto it, the Yukon duffel shoved down into the sawdust and gum shadows at his feet. A Bacardi mirror with fogged glass hangs above the back bar next to a St. Pauli girl clock. The clock's hands frozen at 6:12, permanent happy hour. Another? The bartender wiping under his empty bottle. With a shot of JD this time.
Right up.
He keeps forgetting. Trying to get back to just before. On deck circle. Pure ritual. Mechanical drop of vinyl-covered donut over aluminum barrel. Stretching the bat down his back and around, beginning to swing nice and loose. Watching the pitcher and timing the swing. Watching and timing till it's second nature. No such thing, he needs to tell Coach. Just the nature you're born with, handed down through the generations. He was thinking too much, even in the on-deck circle, before the first pitch was thrown. He can see it now that it's too late. Not empty as he should have been. Cleared out. Too much junk in his attic. thinking about what he'd do if the big chance came, what a game-winning hit would feel like. At the plate, Stemkowski's just taken ball three, and coach is in the dugout barking,
"Good eye, Stem. Good eye, buddy."
The crowd, attendance announced at 683, roaring their heads off as Stem watches ball four ride in tight under his neck and starts jogging up the first baseline, loading the bases. And Sam stakes the bat handle into the packed dirt, dislodging the donut. The weight slips off, and the bat becomes a killing staff. And for about half a minute, a raw, brute strength he's never personally experienced before comes surging through his shoulders down to his hands, and he strides into the batter's box, believing for once that it's going to happen. The strength fills him, blotting out the past, till it takes him too far, tips the meter into the red, and because it's raw and threatening and not really there, this illusion of power, already leaving, leads him to his father. It makes him think of his father. At which moment, the first pitch on its way, he knows in his sinking heart how it's all going to play out.
Dwight. At 11:47 a.m., a man in a patterned vacation shirt not unlike mine steps out of his Lexus SUV, followed by his young son. I watch them through the front window from aisle 7, baseball, softball, more baseball, in a moment of commercial respite and quicksand reminiscence, a Rawlings infielder's glove cupped over my nose, its hefty price tag flapping, inhaling the bicameral whiff of factory-fresh leather. Trying, as ever, to situate myself in actual time and space. Call it a voluntary hijacking. I'm no longer in SoCal Sports and Arenas, California in the year 2006, but in Pat's Team Outfitters in North Haven, Connecticut, circa 1966. Not 50 years old, but 10. Staring up into my old man's wide, creased face, absorbing that shark-skinned voice as he tells me he'll buy me the glove I want, so long as I swear on my life to treat it right. But if he ever finds it food-stained or left out overnight on the lawn, abused in any way, he'll thrash me with it. That's a solid promise, and my playing days will be done. Do I understand? Already this dark shadow he's casting over me and the thing I've always wanted, which dooms me somehow, the little poisoned apple he's offering. And still I crave the glove so much, I'm going to give him the price he demands. And then, before my first season of Little League is halfway over, early one morning he finds the Rawlings, that holy object of calfskin perfection, on our shitty, dew-soaked lawn. Just as he foresaw. I'm still in bed asleep, fielding grounders in my dreams, when he bursts into my room and beats me with it good. Listen to me. These are the sorts of thoughts that too often come back while you're spending 30 months in the hole. And after, too. There's violence in the air, even when nothing is happening. The idea of personal control is just a noble pipe dream. What comes at you feels bitterly, in the end, like some echo of what's inside you. Like any vessel, only more so, a place gets defined by what's in it. A hive hums and buzzes. A fist is nothing without rage. The glass doors open. In come the man and his boy. I pull the glove from my face and replace it on the shelf. Dust myself off, as it were. The boy trailing off his dad's hip at 4 o'clock, but looking up into that trusted face and smiling. The guy turning back over his shoulder. A joke just passing between them, or a story, say, about soggy donuts, wafting in from the parking lot like a cool breeze in summer. Their outward physical details less interesting to me by comparison, though still notable. The dad's big, expensive watch, like a hunk of gold bullion clamped to his wrist, the boy's pro-model Dodgers cap and special edition Tony Hawk slide-ons. Upper-middle-class family, I'd say. He, a rising associate in one of the investment boutiques in the recently developed Arenas Business Park, or a tax lawyer taking a much-deserved post-April 15th day off. His boy, at 10 or 11, a promising private school student with an easy, winning personality, though perhaps too enamored of skate culture and the slackers down by the piers, and so already being prophylactically primed by his parents for a future boarding spot at the exclusive Thatcher School.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?